MLB season off and running. Mariners stumbling early, but it's the first week of April. Seahawks prepping for the fast approaching draft. The Kraken poised to clinch a playoff spot. Our guest, of course, a returning champ, a reporter, providing a ton of great content for SeattleSports.com. His Twitter handle is at TheBGustafson. Brandon Gustafson is back. So how are you and the top retriever Mariner fan doing?
Yeah, no, Maverick and I are doing great. Bark at the Park last night was a blast. He always has a lot of fun, and he's very popular at those, as you might imagine, just based on how handsome and outgoing that he is. So we had a lot of fun.
No, I saw the pictures of him comfortably in his seat, drinking in all the action. So awesome. Let's start with the Kraken, because 5 years ago, Vegas made the Cup Finals as an expansion team. And I don't know if folks thought, well, this isn't so hard. And of course, you know, last year was the debut for Seattle. They did great on the box office, not on the ice. But now, on the brink of clinching the playoffs. So give me kind of a front and center look here. Their run to the postseason, you hear from fans and, you know, colleagues. How front and center is that on the Seattle sports scene?
Yeah, it's a big deal, especially because, like you mentioned, last year was just was not quite the start that a lot of people were expecting, and I think that I don't know if people thought that they could make a cup run like Vegas did in that first year, because they had the same expansion draft rules as Vegas did, and the teams kind of wised up about that, so Seattle didn't get as much luxury with that as Vegas did, but people still thought they might be contending for a 7-8 seed in the Western Conference, and unfortunately it totally tailspinned. They were one of the worst teams in hockey, but it's largely a similar roster that they had last year, added a few pieces, but just a full season of Matty Beniers and just a full offseason, a normal offseason for these guys. It was a big deal. So I think a lot of people are really excited about it. I think that most people, myself included, thought they were probably really a year away from making an actual playoff run. But now we're here, only a few games left. They can clinch as soon as tomorrow night, I think, if they get some help here. Like, it's a pretty big deal, and especially for us to still be talking about them with the NFL draft coming up, with opening day last week, like, That's a big deal, and that's a huge win for the Kraken this year.
Yeah, and 2 months ago, they lost Andrei Burakovsky to the injured list. You know, they signed him to a big deal, was a member of the Avalanche, who won the Cup last year, got a Cup with the Capitals. But I saw that at least he was back skating with the team. So what's the latest on his status, and what kind of jolt would it be if he could be ready for that first round of the playoffs?
Yeah, it would be a big deal. They're a team that at the beginning of the year and kind of the middle of the year before he got hurt, when they were really clicking, part of their strength is just they have four lines that can all score. They have a bunch of guys that are 20-goal guys that are having career years and have just kind of gelled. They don't have that clear number one guy, but he was their top scorer when he went down. So seeing him back on the ice was a big deal. This has taken a lot longer than I think the Kraken initially thought. It's taken a lot longer than we in the media were you know, believing that it was going to take. We thought that he might have already been playing by now, and for him to just get on the ice with the non-contact, like, yeah, that's taken a lot longer than we thought, but it's at least a good sign. They've kind of talked about they feel comfortable with him coming back for the first playoff game. I mean, so it might be a situation where he takes all that time off with the injury and he comes back and it's their first playoff game against Minnesota or whoever it's slating up to be. But that would be a big deal. He definitely lengthens everything. He's a really good player for them. That's a big reason why they paid him the big bucks, and he's somebody that has that playoff experience. I think that having him with Yanni Gourde, two guys that are proven winners with multiple rings on their fingers, I think that'd be a big deal for the Kraken.
Talking with Brandon Gustafson, SeattleSports.com. To the Mariners we go. So when I heard about all the new rules, I was all about it. The game, I thought, had stagnated a bit. Truth be told, most people my age just fear change, I guess. But but from your chair, what did you think initially, and what do you think now? I know it's early, just getting to see it up close and actually in practice.
Yeah, I'm somebody who watches a lot of minor league baseball throughout the year, so I've seen like bits and pieces of it kind of implemented, and namely the pitch clock. And it was one of those things where I didn't think it was going to be a huge transition period like a lot of people feared. And just with how long they've had it in the minor leagues at various levels, it seemed like it was going to be fairly seamless. And, you know, there are a few hiccups here and there, but that's all right. The shift has definitely been noticeable, and I thought at first it would maybe take a little bit of getting used to, but just seeing two guys on each side of the bag, kind of like you're used to when you're growing up playing, if you're playing high school ball, little league, whatever, like that is a little refreshing. It's nice to see a left-handed hitter be able to hit a hard ground ball and it gets through. I mean, that's up here with Jared Kelnick as a young prospect who hasn't quite panned out, and this is kind of a make-or-break year for him. I mean, I think it was opening day. He hits a hard ground ball that last year's probably a ground out, and it's a 0-for-3 day or 0-for-4 day, whatever it is, and instead he enters game two hitting .333, and for someone like him, that's a big deal. So, for the most part, I think it's gone pretty well. It's definitely been interesting to be at a game, like in a work capacity that starts at 7:10, and then it's like, oh, it's 9:15 and the game's over. That's crazy because that never happens. So, it's definitely taken to getting used to just a little bit. But overall, I think that MLB has been pretty thoughtful with how they've rolled it out, and so far it's going pretty well.
Yeah, who would have thought infielders playing on the infield, shortstops on the other side of the bag. It's crazy.
Yeah.
You know,
there we go.
One of the reasons for the success last year was the Mariners had four starters make all 32 starts, none missed due to injury. You know, Robbie Ray had a decent, not a great first year. And, of course, Friday, awful command, and he lands on the IL. So, Brandon, what's the word about his injury? Is it severe? You wrote about it, and who's going to take his spot in the rotation?
Yeah, so with Robbie, it's a flexor strain in his left arm, so it's a kind of forearm elbow injury, and you hear that, and you're like, oh, geez, right? Because I think a lot of people, when they hear elbow baseball, it's immediately Tommy John.
Right.
It's not anything like that. It sounds like it's a pretty minor thing. We had Justin Hollander, the Mariners GM, on our station earlier today. He said he expects it to be about 6 weeks absence, which is probably more like, hey, you know, 4 weeks or so. Then he's kind of throwing, gearing up, rehab assignment. It sounds like they expect him back with the team sometime early mid-May, which is good. What's good for the Mariners, too, is they have Chris Flexen, who was a really good starter for them in 2021 and was having a good year last year, and they moved him to the pen because they got Luis Castillo, who's just an absolute stud of a pitcher, gets the ball here in a few hours up here in Seattle. So they needed a place to put Flexen, and there's a lot of speculation they might trade him to try to get another bat. Ultimately, it didn't happen, and honestly, right now, it's looking like it's a good thing that didn't happen because he's going to slide in. He gets the ball tomorrow. You kind of know what you're going to get with Chris Flexen. He's not going to strike out a bunch of guys, but he pounds the zone. He works deep into games. So the good thing for the Mariners is at least, you know, if one guy goes down, they have somebody like Chris Flexen who can kind of weather the storm. Anything more than that, like with any team, it'll get a little iffy, but just one guy going down, they at least have a pretty proven guy to be able to take a spot in the rotation with Chris Flexen.
I want to double back because you mentioned Jared Kelenic, who, you know, I feel like, again, in spring training, tearing the cover off the ball. Now in season three, would he finally be primed to be the everyday left fielder? You know, the former number 6 overall pick. And I know it's crazy early, but he's hitting .150. He's striking out at an alarming rate. Any sense that his leash has gotten really short and his roster spot is in jeopardy?
And not at this point. I think that they're trying to give him what they think is the softest landing spot, which is, hey, Jared, you're going to face right-handed pitching. So they're facing an Angels team this series that yesterday, lefty starter Reed Detmers, today with Suarez, another lefty. So he's not in the lineup today. He wasn't in the lineup yesterday, but I think they really just want to try to give him as many plate appearances against right-handed pitching in order for him to try to get off to a decent start. They have A.J. Pollock, a veteran right-handed hitter, to handle the lefty side of that platoon in left field, but they think this is the best situation for him. He changed his bat. He changed some mechanical stuff, some approach things during the offseason that, like you mentioned, during spring training, he was awesome. I think he actually led all major league hitters in OPS during spring training, but that's a whole different ballgame compared to what you're seeing in the regular season. So I think it's one of those things where if we're talking about this in a month and a half or so, then yeah, it might be another instance where Jared has to get sent down to Tacoma. They don't really have another guy besides A.J. Pollock to kind of handle that everyday sort of outfield type spot with Taylor Trammell still banged up. So maybe that does help Jared in terms of having a little bit of a longer leash than some people might think. But it really does seem like they think that this is a good moment for Jared to be able to kind of take the ball and roll with it. But obviously, early returns aren't super great. I think the strikeouts are a little alarming. You know, guys can hit into outs, and that's okay. But when you're striking out 2-3 times a game at the beginning of the year, that's obviously not great.
Yeah, you're not going to roll too long at 154.
Right.
Couple final thoughts for Brandon Gustafson. SeattleSports.com to the Seahawks. Offensive line in particular, they brought in Austin Blythe from the Chiefs, started every game last year at center, and then retired kind of out of nowhere. I think he was a free agent, and then they signed Evan Brown from Detroit. So what could you tell us about this? I mean, is he the guy, or is that a move so they could have some versatility?
Yeah, that's kind of a depth signing. If you look at their line right now, there are two tackle spots are set. Charles Cross, first-round pick last year. Abe Lucas, the third-round pick from Wazoo. And then Damian Lewis is going to be at left guard probably again, and he's entering the fourth year of his rookie deal. They brought back Phil Haynes on a one-year deal after releasing Gabe Jackson. So right guard, they at least have a veteran guy there that they know and that they trust. Evan Brown, he kind of swung between guard and center. They think that he's more of a true center. So I think it's a situation where at least right now, when you look at these draft boards, there's two or three kind of high-end centers that are looking like. John Michael Schmitz from Minnesota is the number one guy, and a lot of people think he could be a late first-round pick. I think it's one of those things where if they're not able to get one of those top young guys, they feel at least comfortable Evan Brown can hold that spot down. But it's a position that has been kind of a revolving door for them. Austin Blythe retiring. Ethan Posick was up and down. They had Kyle Fuller, who wasn't very great. I mean, ever since Justin Britt tore his ACL back in 2018, 2019, whatever it was, they've just kind of had a different face there every single year. I know that's a spot that they would love to get solidified, and maybe Evan Brown is that guy, but for right now, he just seems like at least a little bit of a placeholder until we get through the draft and then kind of see what happens there.
The last thing I want to get to, something else you wrote about, maybe their draft philosophy. First of all, I'll always think it's nuts they ended up with the fifth pick in the Russell Wilson deal.
Who would have thought?
Right. And, you know, they signed Geno to a nice contract. So what's the buzz? Maybe want to pick a quarterback to learn behind Smith, defensive line, running back depth. What are you hearing about how they're going to approach things? Because, you know, suddenly it's 3 weeks from Thursday.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy how fast that whole thing goes.
Yeah.
As far as the Seahawks go, I mean, it's one of those things where I think they have to do their homework on the quarterbacks. I don't think that, at least from where I sit, it doesn't seem like that's like the highest priority, but maybe if they fall in love with a guy there at five and that he's still there, they pull the trigger since they can get out of Geno's contract after a year or two. It's a three-year deal, but they can get out of it pretty early without taking too much of a dead cap hit.
Right.
So I think that the home run pick would be Will Anderson, edge rusher from Alabama. The issue is Arizona, who's picking at three, doesn't need a quarterback. And unless somebody's trading up with them, seems unlikely Anderson gets there. You look at Jalen Carter from Georgia, you know, all-conference, all-American type defensive tackle, game wrecker, but just so many red flags off the field,
right.
Character issues, things like that. So there are two or three defensive linemen that could be in play there. They have been open about going to all these quarterback pro days. I think that's maybe a little bit more of a bluff, just like, hey, you want a quarterback? You want a guy? Come trade with us. We're open for business sort of a deal. So ultimately, I think when it's all said and done, they'll take a defender or they'll trade down. I think that with them having two second-round picks also and a pick in the third round, I think there does stand a reason for John Schneider to maybe try to trade down and have five, six picks in the top 100 picks and just try to run the board that way. It's a pretty good high-end draft. There's a lot of good linebackers, defensive linemen in the first few rounds, and those are two big areas of need for the Seahawks. So I think that they're going to go pretty defense-heavy early. I'd like Anthony Richardson as a project quarterback just because he's so unique athletically. I just don't know if that's ultimately what's going to happen for them at five.
Yeah, him at five, I'm not sold on that either. But, folks, he's Brandon Gustafson, SeattleSports.com. Always brings the A-plus info and insight as to what's happening up north. Follow him on Twitter, the handle at the B Gustafson. BG, always appreciate the time. My best to Mav. Be well. And, of course, you and I will talk again soon.
Yeah, you bet, Steve. Take care.
All right, take it easy.